All right, so today we're diving into a topic that tends to spark some pretty strong opinions.
Definitely a sensitive one.
Yeah, the ethics of circumcision. And we're going to be focusing specifically on how it's viewed within Judaism. But before we get into it, just want to be clear. We're not here to tell anyone what to think.
Right.
We're more interested in unpacking the arguments that are being made in our source material.
Give you the information, you make up your own mind.
Exactly. So to kind of guide our deep dive today, we're going to be using the ideas of a philosopher named Karl Popper.
Known for that paradox of tolerance idea.
Exactly, the paradox of tolerance. And I know that might sound a little like intimidating.
A bit jargony.
Yeah, but it's a really interesting concept, so stick with us.
It is. Basically, Popper's saying that if a society is like totally tolerant of everything, even intolerance.
It kind of backfires.
Yeah. Those intolerant voices that
Yeah.
can take over.
It's almost counterintuitive in a way.
Right.
Okay, so our main source material today is an article by Clemens Lindschanger, and he's a humanist writer who, I mean, he really digs deep into the ethics and the philosophy surrounding circumcision.
And he's got a very strong stance on it.
Oh, yeah.
He's very upfront about being against non-medical circumcision of baby boys. Like, he
Yeah.
wants it banned.
Yeah, he does not mince words. He even has this whole thought experiment in the article where he asks readers to imagine if parents were giving these like bizarre, totally non-religious reasons for circumcising their
And
sons.
it'll make the baby more aerodynamic.
Right, or like
Yeah.
better at attracting a mate when he's older.
Attracting aliens. He uses some pretty wild examples, which I think is smart. It kind of like jolts you.
It makes you laugh, but then you're like, oh.
Exactly. Like, why is that reaction so different from when the reason's
And
religious?
that's a big part of what Lynchinger wants us to examine, right? That kind of
Yeah.
like double standard.
Yeah. Like, why does the exact same act suddenly become okay because it's framed as religious?
So to kind of explore this further, Lynchinger actually reached out to some Jewish authorities to try and get their input. Interestingly enough, he never heard back.
Which, in a way, that kind of silence, I don't know, it kind of plays into Popper's whole thing.
Oh, how so?
Well, if you're not engaging in the conversation,
Right.
it's almost like you're contributing to this closed system where outside perspectives aren't really welcome.
Which is like the opposite of an open society.
Yeah.
Okay, so getting back to the article, Lynchinger turns to a key text in Judaism called the Mishneh Torah to kind of give us some context, which I gotta say, I'd never even heard of this before.
A lot of people haven't. It's a fundamental text, though, when we're talking Jewish law. It was compiled by a rabbi named Maimonides way back in the 12th century, and it's like it covers everything: prayer, food, family life,
Like a guidebook.
basically.
Right.
And yeah, circumcision, a big part of it.
And he includes a section from the Mishneh Torah that describes the traditional circumcision ceremony in, well, it's pretty graphic detail, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, he doesn't really sugarcoat it.
He doesn't, which I think is important because it gives you a real sense of what this procedure actually entails, you know,
Yeah.
rather than just talking about it in this like abstract way.
And then he circles back to the lack of response from those Jewish authorities, which is interesting. Like, he had to rely on these historical texts, which might not even reflect what's actually happening now.
Right, exactly. And that's where he brings up this term hermeneutics, which I'm going to be honest, I had to look that one up.
It's a mouthful.
It is. What does it mean?
So basically, hermeneutics is the art of interpretation. Like, how do you understand something, especially something like a religious text that was written in a totally different time and place?
So you're not just reading it at face value, you're taking into account the context.
Exactly. Like, you wouldn't read a physics textbook from the 1600s and just assume everything in it is still considered true, right?
Right.
Things change, our understanding evolves.
So is he suggesting that maybe it's time to look at circumcision through a more modern lens?
I think so. He brings up how, like, other religions, Christianity, for example, have evolved their practices over time. He uses that as kind of, well, if they can do it.
Why not Judaism, essentially?
Yeah.
So it seems like he's really pushing for this like open conversation, right? Like how can we balance tradition and, you know, modern day thinking?
Absolutely. And that leads us to the central conflict Lynchinger keeps coming back to. Whose right is it anyway?
Oof. The parents' right to religious freedom
The
versus.
child's right to bodily autonomy.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And it seems like that's what he really wants us to grapple with. And this ties back into Popper's whole open society thing, right?
Right. A society where people are free to think critically, even about their most deeply held beliefs.
So, how does religious law like fit into that whole idea of an open
Yeah.
society? Because, I mean, by its very nature, isn't it kind of like
fixed?
Yeah.
It's a big question, especially when religious law butts up against individual rights.
It's messy.
Super messy. And it gets even messier when you consider...
Well, hold on. Before we get ahead of ourselves.
Oh, right.
Lynn Schenger brings up some really interesting examples from within Judaism itself.
Yeah. Like, even historically, there have been people who chose not to circumcise their sons.
Give me an example.
Well, Theodor Herzl.
Who is he again?
He's considered, like, the father of modern Zionism. Huge figure.
Okay, right.
And his decision not to circumcise his son was super controversial back then.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows that even within a tradition, right, there's room for individual choice.
And for, like, questioning the status quo.
Exactly. Interesting.
And to illustrate this point even further, Lynn Schenger introduces us to something called Brit Shalom.
Brit Shalom. What's that?
It's this alternative ceremony. It's becoming more and more popular within Judaism, and it's basically like a naming ceremony for baby boys.
Right.
So it still has that element of tradition and spirituality.
But without the actual circumcision.
Exactly. So it's like he's presenting these options, right? Like, how can we honor these traditions, but also, like, think about individual rights and modern ethics.
Right. So it's not necessarily about abandoning tradition altogether. It's more about
evolving it.
Yeah.
Modernizing it.
Exactly.
And having those conversations, even if they're uncomfortable.
Which is what we're doing.
We're doing it. Having the uncomfortable conversations. But speaking of different perspectives, because Lynn Schenger doesn't stop there. He then dives into the legal landscape surrounding circumcision. And it gets kind of complicated.
Oh, tell me about it. He compares Germany and Austria, and it's fascinating how different their approaches are.
Well, break it down for me. What's the difference?
So Germany allows non-medical circumcision, even if it's not done by a doctor, which is wild, right? But then you've got Austria, and it's a bit murkier, right? There's no specific law about it, but back in 2012, their Ministry of Justice basically said that if a trained religious person does it, it's not a crime.
So it's legal in both countries, but for totally different reasons.
Exactly.
How does that even work?
That's what Lynn Schenger wants us to think about. It's not just about what the law says. It's the thinking behind it, right? Like, what values led to that law being put in place?
It's like one country is saying religious freedom trumps everything.
Yeah.
And the other one's trying to, like...
find a compromise.
Yeah.
A middle ground.
Okay, so this brings us back to Popper's paradox of tolerance.
And how that all connects to those really big questions Lynn Schenger asks towards the end.
The million-dollar questions, right? And it gets right to the heart of things.
Yeah.
Like, where did Popper himself actually stand on circumcision? Did he ever, like, directly address it?
You know, that's the thing. He didn't, at least not that we know of. There's nothing in his writing specifically about circumcision. Lynn Schenger even suggests that maybe it's just because, well, Popper's background was more secular Protestant.
But Popper was Jewish, right? Even though he wasn't particularly religious.
He was, yeah.
And he had to flee Europe because of the Nazis.
Yeah.
So it just seems like he would have been aware of, like, the sensitivities around Jewish practices, you know, especially after the Holocaust and everything.
Oh, absolutely. And Lynn Schenger acknowledges that. He kind of speculates that maybe the aftermath of the Holocaust, there was this reluctance to criticize any part of Jewish tradition, even like among non-practicing Jews, you know?
Like everyone was walking on eggshells a little bit.
Totally. And it's important to remember, Popper wasn't just some like abstract philosopher. He was a person living through this very specific and frankly very sensitive historical moment.
So we may never know exactly what he thought about circumcision, but Lynn Schenger argues we can still kind of make some educated guesses based on what we do know about Popper's views.
And this is where it gets really juicy. Like, we know Popper was skeptical of dogma. He always questioned those, like, unquestionable truths.
Right. He was all about reason and critical thinking.
Exactly. Open debate, all that good stuff.
And that an open society has a responsibility to protect itself from intolerance.
Bingo. So if you connect those dots, well, it's plausible that Popper might have viewed non-medical circumcision of infants as a violation of their bodily autonomy.
Because they can't consent.
Right. And that by insisting on this practice, you know, without even being open to discussing the ethics of it, well, that could be seen as a form of intolerance, at least through Popper's lens.
So you're saying we can kind of use his philosophy as like a framework for thinking critically about this.
Exactly. Even though he didn't specifically talk about this one issue.
Which, I mean, that's like the beauty of philosophy in a way, right?
Right.
It gives you the tools.
The mental tools.
Yeah. To kind of tackle these really tough questions.
Love that.
Okay. So shifting gears a tiny bit, Lynn Schenger spent some time talking about cognitive dissonance, which I'll be honest, that term has always kind of confused me.
It's one of those psych terms that gets thrown around a lot, but it's actually pretty straightforward. Basically, it's that icky feeling you get when you've got, like, two conflicting beliefs.
So, like, I believe in being a vegetarian, but I also really love a good burger.
Exactly. And, like, that discomfort, it can be a powerful motivator. So we either change our behavior, or we gotta find a way to, like, justify it, even if deep down we know something feels a little off.
So how does that apply to the whole circumcision thing?
Well, Linshinger suggests that some people, even if they have some, like, internal conflict about circumcision, might experience this kind of dissonance.
Because they're also trying to, like, uphold their religious beliefs, and they don't want to, like, rock the boat too much.
Exactly. So they might be more likely to gravitate towards arguments that, like, downplay the risks or focus on potential benefits, even if those benefits aren't, like, scientifically proven.
So it's a way to, like, reconcile this thing that's maybe causing some internal conflict.
Totally. And Linshinger goes on to, like, address some of those justifications head on, like the idea that it prevents UTIs or reduces STIs.
Which he then kind of dismantles point by point.
Oh, yeah. He cites studies showing that, like, circumcision doesn't actually prevent or even reduce HIV transmission, which is something you hear a lot.
Right. And then there's the hygiene argument. And he points out that, like, good old-fashioned hygiene is just as effective, right?
Without the surgery.
Exactly.
He even tackles this idea that it's somehow more, like, aesthetically pleasing, which, come on, he calls that out for what it is, a cultural bias.
It's interesting, though, even though he's presenting these counter-arguments, he never really comes across as, like, judgmental.
No, I don't think that's his goal at all. I think he really just wants people to be self-reflective, you know? Like, especially when we're talking about something that's done to children who can't consent.
There's that idea of consent again.
Yeah, right. And that's why this whole cognitive dissonance piece is so important. Because if people aren't willing to, like, examine their own potential biases, then having an honest conversation about consent, especially around something as, like, personal and culturally charged as circumcision, well, it becomes near impossible.
So tradition can be a really heavy thing to unpack.
No kidding. And that leads us to one of the most thought-provoking sections of the entire article, where Linshinger digs into the actual biological purpose of the foreskin.
He gets into the nitty-gritty.
He does.
What were your thoughts on that whole section?
So we've been unpacking all these different arguments around circumcision, especially within Judaism.
Looking at the ethics, the philosophy, the psychology, the whole shebang. And Linshinger, he doesn't let us off easy. He ends his article with some seriously thought-provoking questions. Almost like a call to action for all of us.
Oh, yeah. He wants us to keep thinking about this even after we're done reading.
For sure. So let's dive into those questions and see what we can uncover.
Let's do it.
Okay. So he asks, if circumcision is truly so beneficial, why isn't everyone doing it? It's such a simple question, but it kind of stops you in your tracks, right?
Right. It challenges this whole assumption that it's purely about health benefits. Because you'd think if it was really about, like, improving health outcomes, it would be way more universal.
It'd be like, everyone get a flu shot. But
yeah, exactly. But it's not. It's very much tied to specific cultures and religions. And Linshinger, he points out that even, like, major medical organizations aren't exactly gung-ho about it.
Right. It's not like the World Health Organization is out there saying every baby boy needs to be circumcised.
Yeah, their stance is basically, if there's no medical reason, it's not really necessary.
So if it's not really about health, then what is it about?
Well, that seems to be the million-dollar question, right? And as we've been talking about, Linshinger suggests it's probably a lot more about tradition, social pressure, you know, this desire to fit in, to maintain the cultural or religious identity.
Which, let's be real, those are powerful forces, right?
Oh, incredibly powerful. But I think what he's getting at is, like, at what point do those traditions need to be examined, maybe even challenged in light of new information or, like, evolving values?
It's like, how do we make sure the traditions are still serving us?
Right.
And not, like, causing harm? Which brings us to his next big question. And honestly, this one is a real doozy. How do we balance religious freedom with the child's right to choose? Those two things, they can feel kind of at odds with each other, right?
For sure. And it's something that I think a lot of societies are wrestling with, not just in this context. Like, where's the line?
Yeah, it's like, how much autonomy do we afford individuals, especially when they're young, when it comes to decisions about their own bodies, even if those decisions go against their family's beliefs or their religion?
It's complicated. And I don't think there's a simple answer.
Yeah, if there was, we'd probably be out of a job.
Huh, probably. But I think what Linshinger is advocating for is a more child-centered approach. Like, maybe it's time to shift our thinking a bit and say, you know, a person's right to make choices about their own body, that should carry a lot of weight, even if it goes against the grain.
Exactly. And it's not to say that, like, tradition is automatically bad or meaningless.
Right. It's more about recognizing that our understanding of things like ethics, human rights, consent, it's all evolved over time. And maybe our practices, our traditions, they need to evolve too.
So it's not about picking sides. It's more about, like, staying in that messy middle ground and having these conversations, even when they're difficult.
Exactly. And, like, acknowledging that there are people with real experiences and feelings on all sides of this.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it for today. Any final thoughts for our listeners before we wrap things up?
Just, Linshinger gave us a lot to think about, a lot to unpack. He really challenged us to examine our own beliefs, to engage with these really complex issues, and to keep the conversation going.
To keep asking those tough questions.
Yeah.
And to remember that these aren't just, like, abstract ideas, right?
They have real-world consequences for real people. So, yeah, keep learning, keep talking to each other.
Couldn't have said it better myself. On that note, keep diving deep, everyone. We'll see you next time.